Maybe can you start from
Yeah, okay, hello. My name is Dave Lasky. I'm in my 80th year right now, and I was the average conservative Canadian who believed all the propaganda during World War II and the Korean War in the 40s and the early 50s. And my service overseas in the Army was with the Canadian Army Special Force and Commonwealth Occupation Forces in Japan, and I was over there for 2.5 years. And my views on life drastically changed. I met the light of my life, Kinuko Doi, and I had a totally different outlook on life. And we shared the most wonderful and beautiful 53 years of love and happiness together. And I shall always cherish those years. And I am trying to keep Kinuko's message for peace alive, along with all the other Hibakusha. We have to listen to what they have said. And I do my uttermost to meet those ends. We met on a streetcar in Hiroshima, and actually I was in Miyajima, the island of Miyajima, for rest and convalescent, because I had I knew a friend there with me in Miyajima. He was a Japanese Canadian, mm-hmm. and he went back to Japan after the war. The government gave the Japanese people the chance of going somewhere else or going back to Japan, and his parents went back to Japan. And so he joined the Canadian Army over in Japan, mm-hmm. and I met him. And so he was at Miyajima, and when we went into Hiroshima mm-hmm. on the streetcar, and I seen Kinuko-san sitting there, and he says, "Oh, you like that?" I says, "Yes, I do." I said, "Gee." He says, "Well, I'm going to introduce you. I know her," because he knew her. So he introduced me. And I asked her about, well, can we... we want to go to a good movie house, you know. And she says, "Well, when I get off, there's a very nice film, you know, place to see films." And so when we got off the station, the theater was over there, so we got in the lineup, and then Kinuko went. And I'm thinking to myself, and when I look back, so I got out the line, I forgot the movie, and I followed Kinuko, mm-hmm. found out where she lived, and then I kept going into Hiroshima every day to see her. And 6 months later, we were married. And in those days, interracial marriages were a problem. And her mother really didn't care for it too much, but they came around and we got married. And
how old were you back then?
I was 21.
You're 21? She was?
No, 21, yes, 21. She was 22. I mean, actually, she's 11 months older than I am. So we're both the same age for 1 month, and then, mm-hmm. yeah.
Excuse me, your metal is hitting a little bit, excuse me. Okay. And the, okay, so you met her there?
Yes.
What was your first word of, what was the pickup line?
No, there wasn't. I didn't have a pickup line because my friend knew her. And he says, and he asked her in Japanese first that we're looking for a good movie theater, and this Canadian wants to meet you. And right away she knew that I wasn't American then, I was a Canadian. And so they were talking in Japanese about where, and then I finally got the message that there was one near her house, a movie house near her place. So when we got off the streetcar with her, she pointed to the movie house, and we went to the movie house, right? And when I got in the line, and I'm thinking, gee, I want to, you know, and I look back at her, and I thought, I'm going to, so I got out the line, and I followed her, and I caught up to her, and, "Can I walk you home?" She says, "Okay," and we walked to her home, and we had a bottle of beer, and talked, and then I kept going back every day, well, every second day, as often as I could. Because in Kure, you could get on the train, and it only took maybe 20 minutes on the train, half hour. And at that time, the British Commonwealth Occupation Forces had the had their special station, and they rode in the same train, and I didn't have to pay for the fare. I could go anytime I wanted to, at the RTO office, they call it. And I met all of her brothers and sisters. And
so you were stationed there because
of the Korean War. The United Nations authorized the use of troops against North Korea, and back in them days, communism was a big threat. And as I said before, I was a very conservative young Canadian, and I believed everything I heard of what the government told me and what's in the newspaper. And I jumped at the chance to enlist and protect our way of life against the so-called communist threat. And looking back now, I can realize if I had known what I know now, I don't think I would have joined the army. But I thought we were protecting freedom. Like I said before, during the war years, the World War II, we fought for the freedom and peace of mankind, more or less. But in Canada, we didn't include Asians as equals. The Asians couldn't vote in this country. Japanese couldn't migrate to Canada until 1960, but back then, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. I thought it was normal practice until I went overseas and I met Kaneko-san. I seen how advanced Japan was, and I realized that political spin and propaganda, a young person like myself, or today young people, they believe what they hear, and you get a never-ending strife between peoples and countries. And when countries want to advance their way of life and their agenda, sometimes they commit atrocities, and that's exactly what has been going on. The Japanese Empire, in the wars in Asia, committed atrocities, and I realize that the government of Japan should apologize, but likewise, the American government committed atrocities. They firebombed in Europe, they firebombed Tokyo, which is against the Geneva Convention, it's against the Articles of War, and it's a crime against humanity. And further to that firebombing, they dropped two atomic bombs with no justification. And freedom is what people want. And freedom, we have to maintain our freedoms to be able to see through the political spins and get together and help make the world a better place to live for everyone, instead of just my section or your section. And the economical breakdowns, the war on terror, they've covered over the fact that America used the first atomic bombs on human beings, and it was totally unjustified. As a matter of fact, the Americans claimed they used the bomb to end the war and save lives, when in fact, when you check all the military records, it's not true. That was a myth, and that myth was created by the American administration at the time to justify the use of the bombs. So I have lived with Kaneko-san for 53 years. I'm very close to Hiroshima survivors and Hibakusha.
Okay, maybe you can go back. When was the first time she told you? Do you remember the exact...
Well, when I first met her, she had a scar, an obvious scar on her face. And she seemed looking at her scar. And she says, atomic bomb, you know, and I said, oh. And I felt... I didn't want to ask her about it. I knew that she was in the atomic bomb. But back then, we didn't realize the full implication. I mean, the records and the movies and the pictures that people see nowadays were withheld from the public until late 1970s. And when that information came out, people could see what happened and that it was dead written wrong. Kaneko-san, she was a survivor, fine. When I first met her, but she was my beautiful wife. And I wouldn't push her and ask her for questions, and she kept it to herself. She kept it to herself. And she decided to go public when these pictures came out in the late 70s and the 80s. And as a result, they produced films, the Japanese peace movement, produced films like The Prophecy and the films like that, and I seen those films and she seen those films, and she never told her story to people. She kept it to herself. At that time...
To you as well.
She decided to use them. But before that came out, in 1980, we were in Japan and we had formed a Society of Canadian of the atomic bomb survivors in Canada. Peter Cole, when we went home in 1980, her brother, her sisters, they were all getting help from the government. They had their certified victim book. Okay, so they had that book. And I thought, gee, well, Kiko, you should get one too. So she went down to City Hall, she registered, and they accepted her, and they says, yes, that's good, okay, you're a survivor. But I'm sorry, we can't give you any money or any benefits because you don't live in Japan. And she was very disappointed and saddened. And so when we came home, she decided to work for survivors' benefits overseas benefits. And we formed the Canadian Society of Atomic Bomb Survivors. We found 18 people in Vancouver, and they all came over to our house, and we filled out papers and everything. And the survivors up from Seattle came up to help us. And I registered the society. It was registered. Kanuka was the president of that society. And we operated. And then after we had formed the society, we went to Hiroshima and visited Hiroshima. And we spoke to the mayor. Kanuka spoke to the mayor and to the medical associations. And they said, we need a vehicle for us to come. And in the United States, they had a sister society relationship with the medical field. So we came back to Canada, and we approached the British Columbia Medical Association and proposed a sister society relationship to enable the doctors to come here. And they agreed, and they came. And it was because of this vehicle of the sister society relationship between the two medical teams that they were able to come to Canada, Vancouver, and examine survivors here in Canada. And that was a result of Kinuko's hard work, and I helped her with it. And I'm very proud, and I feel it was an honor to be able to work for the benefits of Hiroshima survivors living outside of Japan. And that was finally, she actually finally started receiving benefits not until 2003. So we had been working for those benefits since 1980 to 2003 when she got them. And the other sad part is that they offered to, she had three or four operations on her face. They offered her further medical benefits for her face, and she went back to Japan, and they did surgery, and they completely removed the scar. And a year later, she passed away. So that she worked so hard for those benefits, and but her main interest was children and schools. And she used to go to all the schools, and she'd show the documentary films that the Hibakusha group had sent her, and she'd give her little talk and her story. And she accented on the use of the origami crane in children.
Well, when was the first time she ever told you the story?
The first time I heard her story was actually when she wrote it all out, was when she went to Washington, D.C., to Senator Edit.
About to you personally?
That's to me personally. When she had to go and speak in Washington, D.C., she had to write it out because she had to speak in English. And I helped her with the English. And at that time, I heard everything that she said, because in Japan, when we came to Canada in November of 1954, I knew she was a survivor, but I didn't push her. I didn't ask questions. The war is over, you know. They'll never use that thing again. At that time, we thought they'd never use that the atomic bombs again. So when we came to Canada to make a home, to make a living, we bought a home in Richmond, and we kept to ourselves, and we did not participate in the peace groups and the movement of the peace groups. We Kinuko-san in Japan, they were conservatives. They believed in their country. And I was Canadian, and I was conservative, and I believed in my country, but I didn't believe in protesting. Protest. But when that information came out on those pictures of that they held in the National Archives, when that information came out, and she seen that, and due to the fact that the American politicians that said Kennedy and Hatfield, who proposed those nuclear freeze proposals, reductions in forms, they heard of Kanuka's work with survivors, and they asked her if she'd come and testify at Washington. So then Kanuka said, okay, she decided she would. She felt it her duty and her personal responsibility to do that. And to do that properly, she tried to write it out because she had to speak it in English. And I myself, I didn't learn Japanese, and I didn't really correct Kinuko-san's English. I loved Kinuko the way she was. I just loved her accent. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was detrimental to the information that we should have been giving to people. Mm-hmm. But when I got involved with the with the production or writing of helping her write her story, that's when I learned the little details that she never discussed with anyone before. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, she decided to relate her experience to others on the horrors of that bomb.
Well, in the hopes you, what did you feel when you first saw it?
I was devastated. I mean, what could I, you know. The way I feel now, people in Iraq have been killed for what? And here, my lovely little girl went through such horror, and I just tried to help her and get the message of the Hibakusha across to ordinary people so they understand. Most people are accepting it. They think, we're going to have atomic bombs. And they say it's political. Well, political is the result of what we are doing today. And when people ignore it and they don't realize that they are a product of their environment. If you go out and you do certain things, you form opinions and you let things go. Mm-hmm. So here we are in Canada. We have troops in Afghanistan and they're fighting for freedom. Yet the majority of the Canadians in this country do not want to be in Afghanistan. It's a minority government that's controlling it. And they want to increase further military combat actions in Afghanistan, whereas I feel they should be concentrating on the economical help. Mm-hmm. And the aid. But the accent is always on the military sure. bombs, the military.
Sure, sure.
You know?
But as a personal, as a somebody very close to her, you were able to, you were very moved. You could not, because the extent of these stories sometimes are very, almost inhumane.
Yes.
And what was your first reaction? What you just felt at the moment, if you could go back to that time?
Well, when Kanuko started writing the story and I seen what she went through, I was devastated. My main anger was against Europeans, us white race. We did that. We dropped the bomb. We, down through the ages, man's inhumanity to man has been passed to generation and still happening today. And yet, when you consider the Pacific Asian Wars, the European nations were in Asia trying to get a piece of this, a piece of that. They were all out for their interests and protecting their interests. And Japan stood up to that. And in doing so, they committed atrocities, the same as the Americans committed atrocities in defeating their enemies, like the firebombings in Europe, the firebombings in Tokyo, and then the use of these bombs, which they didn't have to use. And a product of our environment, so we have to get the message out to people, the ordinary people, the ordinary man on the street, not the intellectual level, because we've had philosophers for ages pointing out the way that we should live and do unto others as you do unto you, but when you have a political spin and the government telling you something else, and if you don't question that and search for the truth, we wind up with what we have today. We have nuclear arms that can actually destroy the earth and destroy the planet as we know it today. And then if we don't put a handle on it and stop referring it to as a political problem, but to work together to try and resolve it, is what the problem is. And Kinuko-san always said that wars have been repeated over and over in the name of freedom and peace. And she believes that love and understanding is the only way. You cannot build peace on mistrust and threatened feelings. And her message was simple and straightforward, and yet people are failing to grasp the seriousness of what's going on today. And I think we should.
How did you learn it from her?
Pardon me?
How did you learn that from her?
When I heard her story and when she spoke.
No, but her message of the love and understanding is the way.
Well, that's the way she brought up our daughter, and she said, violence is not the answer. We can't fight, you know. When she went into schools and she'd teach children, and she says, if you don't like somebody, you don't go and step on their toe and push them. You respect them, you get to know them, and you get to understand them, and then eventually you will like them. But when you see someone and you don't like their looks and you want nothing to do with them, that's the wrong attitude. You have to respect the person and get to know what they do and what they think, and perhaps you can get to like them. But if you don't like them and if you don't like their point of view, violence and pushing is not the answer. It's further search into what you can do for them and what they can do for you and work together. And her philosophy was always the same.
And that was something that you... was something new for you, or was something very familiar?
I mean, that's something that I never thought about. I mean, when you grew up as a child, you're taught certain things, and you react a certain way, and you get involved in sports, and you study, you take up a profession or whatever you're doing, and you don't think about annihilating a total nation. You don't think about wiping out thousands and thousands of people just because your interests are at risk. I mean, the position that they're taking on the international scene is it's okay to do anything to anybody as long as it's in your interest and protects your nation. And we have to learn that we are on this earth and we have to live all together. And Kinuko's attitude and my attitude has been built up because of that horror that was inflicted on humans. And I don't understand how people can just slip it off and say, oh, it was war. Forget about it. Well, hey, then we're going to have another war. Like I've said before, if freedoms must be built on the truth, and to have a lasting peace, it must be built on the truth, because if you force somebody to do something and then the truth comes out later, then there's fights again and they start all over and it never ends. So that our way of life has to be dealt with, and we have to realize the problems that people face with the ignorance. And basically, on the intellectual level, it's understood. But the man on the street and the general person that goes out for a good time isn't worried about things like that. And as long as the people that produce the armaments can keep us at odds with each other, then they will control what happens to us every day.
How did Kinuko-san teach, you said that she was active, going to schools and showing documentaries.
Kinuko-san, she used, in the schools with the children, she used the origami crane and the story of Sadako. And what she would do, she would say, you have to fold the crane and it has to be neat and everything has to be prepped, and that's why you're going to school, to learn how to do things properly. Mm-hmm. And when you make the correct folds on your origami crane, and she'd be folding it and blow it up, and there you have a pretty little peace crane. But she'd take another piece of paper and start folding again, and she'd say, if you fold a crane and you miss out a step, and she keeps on folding and then blows it open, and it's an ugly little duckling. It's not a beautiful peace crane, so there's a mistake. So you have to unfold it, refold it, and make the correct and include all the steps. And that's what's happened with our peace process. We've made a mistake, and we have to look back and correct that mistake. And in her opinion, the biggest mistake they have made in the world is the use of atomic bombs and producing a weapon that can destroy the planet.
So. Sure, sure. And then if you may, would you be able to share how the time she passed away, she was sick, or from what?
Well, she had tumors, and she had operations of tumor removed. And she had three operations on her face, and the fifth one was back in Japan. Mm-hmm. It was hard, and I don't know. I look at the world and what's happened, and to me, America, they're the same as us, Canadians in America, we're North Americans. To me, they were brothers and sisters. And when I first joined the services and I went down to Fort Lewis and I was stationed in the American base, and they were like brothers and sisters, no problems. But I didn't know. Sure, I knew there was an atomic bomb drop, but they hushed up the effects. They had all they concentrated on was the power of that bomb, and we've got to keep order in the world. But until I seen what they hushed up and what the results of that bomb actually were, I felt, duh. Not all Americans are like that, but the people, that the political machine did it again. Or they did the worst thing they could have done. And if they're not held in check, it's going to happen again. I mean, they have the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty that was signed way back in 1968, and five of the countries that signed that proliferation treaty have nuclear weapons. And 184, whatever it is, have signed, but they agreed not to possess or develop nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the five that exist continue the upgrading of the tactical nuclear weapons and the delivery systems, and they're not abiding by the treaty for non-proliferation. Then there's additional states now of Israel, India, Pakistan, that have weapons too, that aren't in that treaty. That nuclear weapons treaty has to be upgraded to a verifiable agreement with a set date for the elimination of nuclear weapons. And everyone should be working towards that end to get rid of nuclear weapons. And then concentrate on getting rid of war, because war isn't the answer.
I see. So she was, her sickness was direct, could it have been related to the atomic bomb related symptoms, or was that was never known?
I feel she had a result of the cancer from the atomic bomb. Everybody knows that anyone who's exposed to radiation is exposed to the their system is cannot fight the cancer, mm-hmm. cancers that prevail. I know they blame most of the deaths on cancer on smoking, and basically Kiriko and I both smoked, but we quit quite a few years ago. And when they found, when she started having pains, etc., this is in the 90s, in the late 90s, they classified that as shingles, and she suffered pains, and I it was terrible. And finally, she couldn't walk, and then I phoned the doctor, and I said, shingles doesn't attack people's ability to walk. And they took her in for a CAT scan and everything, and they found out it was small cell lung cancer. Small cell lung cancer that had gone down her back and affected her legs, and she lost her mobility. And they said, it's so far gone, we can't do anything, we can't cure it. And they gave her 3 months to live, but she died in 3 weeks. Just quick. And to me, if you're exposed to radiation, you're exposed to cancers. And I feel they have these, the medical profession, and they come up with this, that, this and that, and nobody really knows. I mean, you take today the global warming. Of all the thousands of nuclear weapons that have been exploded in the world today, and now they're saying we're having a global warming. Well, they're blaming it on carbon, exhaust of vehicles, of course. But how much of that problem is contributed to the explosion of all those nuclear weapons? And Hiroshima bomb was devastating, of course, but now the bombs they have are 80 times the power. 80 times the power.
So, what was her last word? If you remember her last word to you, or?
She asked me to She asked me to take care of myself. Don't get downhearted. Keep working towards peace. And keep the Lantern Day ceremonies going in Vancouver if I can. And have them proclaim Hiroshima Day. Every day, every year. And I asked her, can you go? We have our cemetery plots. I'm going to have to put you there. And then she looked at me. I said, no, honey, I'm going to keep you with me. And when I go, we'll both go in there together. So I'm going to keep you with me by my side forever. And that's what I've done.
So you kept
her ashes in an urn upstairs, yeah. I have her ashes in an urn.
So you feel that you're still close to her?
Yes.
Yeah, you're with her.
I can feel her presence. And when I recall the phrases that she used, and I just loved her accent and the way she stated it, and just beautiful.
Yeah. And then so you were planning to, so you speak with her every day, or how do you, in what way do you feel her?
Oh, no, every morning I say good morning, Ohio. Thank you, and I thank her for pointing me in the right directions, because we never really had any serious arguments at all. We were happy together, so happy. For 53 years, I never thought it would come to an end, and when it does come, it's hard to bear. It's hard to bear.
Mm-hmm. Right now there's a. How do you keep her message alive? How are you keeping her message alive?
When Kanuko passed away, I am a veteran, so I joined the Veterans Against Nuclear Arms, and that's an outfit, an organization that's right across Canada, and so when they have protests or meetings, and I join in with their efforts and. Tell about my experience and of Kanuko's story, and point to the fact that, hey, these nuclear weapons are still here and nobody's even thinking about them. Basically, last Sunday, I attended a meeting at VSA9 group, and we talked about war experiences, and I related my little experience and the fact that we all have to get together and work.
Can we change the... Excuse me. I have a very important question, which is, right now there's many people are talking about, like, what's called 2030, which is maybe that will be the last day when the last Hibakusha will be around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many have died, and many are dying. And it really is the last 5 years. The people that really remember the 1945, what was 6 or 9, are 80, 85. Really. The ones that are baby don't remember as much, and they have a completely different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Japanese people, we are losing Hibakusha. We are losing a certain memory.
Mm-hmm.
The world is losing certain witness to a certain, one of the devastating, most devastating
mm-hmm.
events on the earth of this century.
Mm.
What do we do?
Well, we have
perhaps
to...
And if you can connect it to your personal experience
mm-hmm.
of losing someone.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and then how you kept working and
mm-hmm.
telling, relaying the message.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it not possible?
Mm-hmm.
Can you not be as effective as what she was?
Mm.
Well, I think, but this is a very important question. What are we going to do if we don't have those Hibakusha to tell the story?
Yeah, well, I've said it. I mean, I voted. Were you there?
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me? I mean, I don't know how you can make it any clearer. Like, basically, when when we say they're ignoring the nuclear proliferation treaty, mm-hmm. we've had the voice of the Hibakusha and their message for peace over and over. And what happened to the Hibakusha is horrendous. And yet, like you say, most of them are 80 and over, and they're dying off, and we won't have that story to help guide us and realize what we face. And when I say that there are over 20,000 nuclear warheads in existence today, people don't seem to realize the horror of that, you know. Russia and the United States each have 2,000 nuclear weapons on hair trigger release alert, ready to be launched on a 15-minute warning signal. And in a Time magazine article last week, they're talking about the Cold War, and it rages on. They're talking about Canadian and U.S. soldiers in NORAD's missile center, in control rooms, deep, inside of the mountains of high above Colorado, and they are on duty 24 hours a day, and they are the last sentries of the Cold War, ever vigilant, and training today for the end of the world. And when you tell people that, they class it as politics. We have to keep pointing out the fact that our everyday lives are in danger because of a system that's set up like that. And when the strongest country in the world ignores international law, it's a problem, and we better smarten up. That's what I would say.
It's true. You know? But sometimes I find myself difficult to try to not being the actual witness and trying to really relay the message. Of course, we can videotape and record. And
but the people hear all of these horrendous figures and the horror just faced and everything, and yet they fail to be moved. They're more interested in their own personal lives and their day-to-day living, and they ignore what's going on around them. And if we continue to do that, then we'll be facing another nuclear Armageddon. If it goes too far, and if all the nations that have nuclear weapons have all at war, then it will destroy the planet. And that was made clear in all the documents that have been released today, and the people that have, the scholars that have studied it, And yet we still have to get off of our clouds, come down to earth, and work to help each other and recognize. And when you have this all mixed up with racism and the evil people of the world, it's a real problem. But life is worth fighting for, and we shall fight for the freedoms of all nations, regardless of color or creed.
Okay, can we ask you why we have the tape fresh tape? Can we do... Okay, please.
This is a story that I shall read to you, and it's the first story that I helped Kinuko type on a typewriter, and it was her words, and it was really the first time I heard all of these details so distinctly and clearly, and it's bothered me. But anyways, here we go. August 6, 1945, I was 1.4 kilometers from the hypocenter in Hiroshima. I was a 16-year-old mobilized student nurse working in the communications hospital. It was a beautiful Sunday morning. I heard the B-29 high in the sky come and go. I saw a long, white, thin trail in the blue sky. Seconds later, I was surrounded by brilliant orange light. At that moment, I thought a bomb was dropped outside the window. A great pressure rolled me back and forth. I couldn't control myself. My body was bouncing like a ball. Then crashing sounds over my head. Something hit my head and slapped my face hard. Quickly, I put my hands to my head. Blood is coming down all over. I saw like a heavy fog is slowly lifting, and I found myself sitting out in the hallway. I was blown out of the room. People are moving in silence and blood all over. I went to the washroom that was off the hallway. The taps were left running. Water mixed with blood. People dead. Dying people all over on the floor. In the mirror, I saw a horrible creature. I couldn't see too clearly. I wipe off the blood to see. Usually my pigtails hang down in front, but my hair was scorched, dusty, and gray. The pigtails were standing up like horns. My face was like a busted open watermelon. From then on, it was a horrible nightmare. A few days later, I was detained. I was determined to go to my mother. I crawled towards Hiroshima Station. About 1 mile, I flew over, crawled over many dead bodies. Every often, I would lift my head and high to see, and open my eyelid to see where to go. I heard people saying that there was no trains because the station was badly damaged. I had to go to the next station almost 2 miles more, crawling, passing out, always trying to keep moving. I was almost there to the station. I saw a man in front with schoolboys hurrying to station. He looked like a schoolteacher. I tug on his pant leg and begged him to please take me on the train. He picked me up and took me on the train. The train was packed with injured and dying and dead people. Those standing were helping. My mother said it was 15 or 16 days after the bomb when I came home. I passed through a period of radiation sickness, blind and crippled for 1 year, no medication, no doctor, no hospital to go to, only my mother to nurse me with fresh spring water. Later, every time I saved my money, I had plastic surgery on my face in Japan and in Canada. I don't like to talk about that day, but it is the only way to show people I care for all mankind. I wish that no one has to follow my footsteps, and I wish that all people will simply realize that bombs are only for destroying things we love and teach us to hate. They cannot give us peace or love. Today is the anniversary of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. To prevent this from happening, okay, cut that. So this is one that was rewritten of the first one that she did for Nagasaki. This isn't the one that she quoted in, or she used it in Washington. I'd have to go up and...
You revised it.
Pardon me?
You revised it with her and then...
Yeah, yeah.
She spoke. Where did she spoke? In pardon? Congress? In front of Congress? Or was there some type of more private meeting?
Oh, she spoke at the U.S. Senate, at the U.S. Senate hearings.
U.S. Senate hearings.
Yeah, it was a joint resolution proposed by Senator Edward M. Kennedy and Mark Hatfield, and when all of that information was released from the U.S. National Archives that showed really what happened, and all the military war records on how the bomb was used and why, then people came to their senses and realized, well, that was wrong, and the political opposition, Kennedy and Hatfield, proposed a nuclear freeze and reductions form. That was the first efforts, and then followed, you know, and because they had heard of Kanuko working with survivors, she was on the news in Seattle and different places, they invited her to come to Washington, D.C.
Along with various other Hibakusha.
There was two, well. There was three other. There was Hiroko Harris, and I've got the pictures in the newspaper.
Also, Issei Nakagawa?
Pardon me?
Was he a gentleman?
There was one doctor, a dentist there, mm-hmm. and then Harris and I've got the name somewhere. There was,
I think I'm going to see him in San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So then I'll give you a picture of him you
sure,
can take.
Sure.
So I've always said that Kinuko's message is on behalf of the Hibakusha, and her work for the Hibakusha was always with others. It's not by herself. What can one person do in this world today? You know, it's. yeah. Yeah. Do you want me to get the other one, or you can just
leave
it just to prevent more from happening, refresh your memories, and face our responsibility. Oh, okay. Okay, then I'll start again, and you can splice it or whatever, and I'll just leave out that part about, okay. I don't like to talk about that day, but it is the only way to show I care for all mankind. I wish that no one has to follow my footsteps, and I wish that all people will simply realize that bombs are only for destroying things we love and teach us to hate. They cannot give us peace, or love. To prevent this from happening again, refresh our memories and face our responsibility to future generations. I deeply believe that love and understanding is the only way. No more Hiroshimas, no more Nagasakis.
Why do you think you met...
Bring?
Why do you think, you know, we meet people with various, you know, happenings and contexts and, and we meet people like that. And why do you think, in Japan it's called Goen, but why do you think you met Kiniko-san?
Why do I
think... Why do you think you met Kiniko-san? Why do you think...
I the reason that I met Kiniko is beyond me. I mean, people on their journey in life, they develop certain tastes, certain idioms, and they're happy. One thing makes a person happy, and the same thing will make another person sad. We're all different human beings, and I was over there, and I thought the communists were bad. And even in Japan, they had actions against communism, they're no good, etc. And that was far from my mind. I was out for a good time, and I seen a beautiful girl, and gee, she just, I fell in love with her the instant I saw her. And when my friend knew her, I was so happy. And then when we made the excuse to go somewhere, and then I go, I'm not going to go, I'm going to follow Kiniko. And I kept after her, and I'm glad I did. And I think everybody in their lifetime meets a person that means everything to them. Some people don't recognize it, and it gets away from them. And I'm so happy I was able to get that.
Okay.